Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast, where we bring together the best medical minds, thought leaders, scientists, patients, and caregivers to inform and inspire the spondylitis community. I'm your host, Jill Miller, living my best spa life, knowing that how we meet today has the power to change everything going forward. Please note that the information provided in this podcast should not be considered medical advice. We do encourage all listeners to consult their healthcare professionals for medical concerns. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find our discussion today enlightening. Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast. Today, our guest is Dr. Simon Korte, a neuroscientist from the Netherlands who investigates immune-brain interactions and has focused much of his career on fatigue and rheumatic conditions. He also lives with spondyloarthritis. He was interviewed for Spondy Plus in 2020 on why fatigue plagues so many with spondyloarthritis, a conversation with leading researcher and spondyloarthritis warrior, Dr. Simon Korte. Welcome to SpondyCast.
Thank you. Thank you. From now on, you can call me Simon.
Okay. Thank you. I will try. I told you in the green room, if I mess it up, we'll figure it out.
No problem.
So Simon, first, thanks for taking your Friday afternoon into your evening to do this. But you have spent much of your life researching fatigue. What made you interested in pursuing this?
In fact, for me, everything started in 1976. At that moment, I was diagnosed with spondyloarthritis. And I didn't only have back pain, but also a very big knee. I had an inflammation in my knee. And I discovered every time when I had stress, I had more inflammation in the knee. And also the knee got thicker. So then I became very interested in how stress affects the immune system. And in a way, how the brain affects the immune system. And when I grew older, I also experienced more fatigue. And at that time, it became clear that the immune system also affected the brain. For many years, we knew that severe immune activation, for example, virus infections, produce fatigue. That made me wonder whether my fatigue could be caused by chronic immune activation, more precise, chronic inflammation. And that's why I became more and more interested. So, and when I asked my rheumatologist at that time, I experienced so much fatigue, they often answered with, yeah, we don't know what to do with it. So, and that motivated me even more to do research in that field.
That's fascinating. So you did what I think is what really creates change in things, which is you saw the problem and you took responsibility for trying to like track it down and solve it. So thanks for that. Tell me a little bit about, from your research, the difference between being tired versus fatigue.
That is a very, in a way it's not that difficult because it's also a kind of a matter of definitions. I think when you have really fatigue, then sleep doesn't help. So, but when you are tired, it improves. In a way, it's healthy to be tired because that makes you sleep and you recover afterwards. Whereas when you have extreme fatigue, sleep doesn't help.
Is brain fog related to fatigue? Because a lot of us experience it.
That is, in a way, that's also a matter of definitions. I call it cognitive fatigue. And I experience also myself this brain fog. But when you say brain fog, it sounds a little bit like mysterious.
Right.
As a scientist, I always would like to measure things so that we can see improvements when you do a certain treatment. And I think that's why we also need more and more patients in research because they can tell you what you feel. Whereas the rheumatologist doesn't anything about feelings. The patients know their feelings.
Right.
So what I what I noticed myself is that I had, when I have really a lot of fatigue, I have difficulty focusing. So then I struggle more with concentrations, conversations. I also have at that time memory problems and difficulty having recalling information, forgetting appointments, tasks. Sometimes I even go to the kitchen and then I forgot what I'm doing in the kitchen. So then I have to walk back and go again. And I experience slow thinking. So I think brain fog has a lot to do with slow thinking, that it somehow takes a lot of energy for these cognitive processes. But also difficulty learning new skills and difficulty. And I'm really wondering whether other patients also experience this difficulty in suppressing environment stimuli. And I mean, for instance, when you are in a group of people, I have a problem with all the different noises. Somehow I can't suppress all the noises around me. And also when I'm in a shop, I have difficulty sometimes as if all the stimuli, all the colors, I can't suppress them. And that's why I think we need more and more patients, because they can tell you whether they experience it or not. Whereas when you say I have fatigue, yeah, nobody knows. A lot of people think you're tired, but that's not the point. It's much more complex. And I think that we as patients can do a lot just by trying to find what is fatigue for us.
Wow. So you said something that for me was profound just now, which is the environmental stimuli.
Yeah.
For years, I go into a store and I can't hear the person in front of me because everything is around me. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when we're in a noisy place, my kids are like, are you losing your hearing?
No, it's good. I hear
my hearing is good. I hear it. It's just not. And it's, I often wonder, and this is maybe a question for another episode, but I often wonder, because yes, I think what you're talking about, this environmental stimuli, it is, there's too many things happening. And I've often wondered, is it related in some way to to ADHD? But it's something that many of us deal with who have AS. And you're the first person I've ever heard say it out loud. And it almost made me cry in a good way.
Yeah, of course. But I mean, that's often when I talk, what I in the beginning said, that for me, talking with people with spondyloarthritis is like talking with family, because somehow we understand each other much better. Because these feelings, you experience the same.
Right.
And then you have the feeling, I'm not stupid. I'm not crazy. It belongs to the disease.
Right.
And I think it becomes time that also researchers, scientists should address these problems. And not just as being, yeah, that's a problem between the ears.
Right. And many of us, I'll say, at least on the U.S. side of the ocean, mm-hmm. and in particular, women have frequently been diagnosed with either you're crazy or you have chronic fatigue or fibromyalgia when we don't meet the criteria because they don't know what to do with us for many years. And the spondyloarthritis diagnosis can be a breath of fresh air after going through not being heard for so many years. So in SPA and AS, is there... Are there different buckets of fatigue specifically, or?
Yeah, I think to my opinion, There are at least three different types of fatigue. I think there's motivational fatigue. I often have it in the morning, for it takes a lot of energy to start up. And it's not just about pain. It's more that it's difficult to motivate to as if I have to go up a hill. And after a while, when I'm at the top, then it goes. But first, yep, I have to climb the mountain, it feels. Whereas it's not a real mountain, but for me, it is a mountain. And for other people, it's hard to understand this motivational thing, because then you get remarks like, yeah, you have to push more, you have to go for it. But that's not how it works. And the other type, what we just talked about, is this brain fog or cognitive fatigue, with all these problems. And then I think there's a kind of physical fatigue that is characterized by limitations in physical exercise. Again, that's not just a pain, but also like you don't have the energy for doing that. In a way, I'm very optimistic about the future. Perhaps that's, we should stress that a lot, because now there is long COVID. Mm-hmm. I think there will be much more research into immune-related fatigue.
Oh, yeah, good point.
And in a way, I could predict, even in the beginning of COVID problem, then I said already, I predicted there will be a lot of people that will develop a kind of sickness behavior with a lot of fatigue. And because this problem is known for many, many years, we have the, I think, kissing disease. That's when you have an infection with the Epstein-Barr virus. People can, yes, be having fatigue for 1 year. There are so many different viruses that you have a kind of post-virus syndrome. But the interesting thing is, the virus is gone.
Right.
And a similar thing you can see in chronic inflammations. So when you have a kind of remission and you have a low state of inflammation, then still you can have the fatigue. Because in a way, your brain is changed, desensitized, so you feel the fatigue much more.
Yeah.
So it really can take a long, long while before the brain really recovers.
Yeah, my meter for fatigue is usually when I'm getting a lot of like warm joint. Like, I tend to be in good shape, and then I know like fatigue is for me personally associated with feeling like everything's a little tingly, and they go hand in hand for me. How personally for you, like, what does fatigue feel like?
It's a bad feeling.
I know.
I mean, it's like, at the start of this year, I had to end my job, because after 48 years, it became too much, too much energy. And so I also went, I like to spend the energy I have to my wife, to my children, and not just on working. So I was now able to retire earlier. And it was difficult for me. I went to a psychologist, because of course I wanted to continue my research, but on the other hand, it just was impossible to do so.
Yeah.
And so I experienced what I really think what lowers the quality of my life is that I have this motivational fatigue. So when family says, shall we go to the movie? Shall we go to a restaurant? And that I have to explain that I suffer too much from fatigue at that moment. And of course, they know it. I can explain it well to them. But still, even if you can explain it, it's a pity. And so what I do a lot of is a kind of fatigue management, Like, okay. For instance, this interview of this podcast, then the last days I didn't do that many things and I try to save energy. And the next days I can suffer more from fatigue, but that's not a problem because I had this podcast and I really like to do this. So, and that gives also a positive feeling because now and then you also have to do things you really like. You just need it. But you have to be, it took a long time for me to, because I call always people with this type of disease warriors, because we are used just to cross our boundaries and to go on. And I now learned that I have to learn to feel again and not just ignore things. And so by feeling more and not to cross my boundaries, I have more energy to do the things I really like to do.
Yeah, I as you describe this, I'm taking myself back 10 years ago to when I had small children and had that motivational fatigue, and I didn't have a name for it until just now, I think. And I'm overcome by what you just said, because I remember days when, and everyone around you, if they don't understand it, they judge it. And I can remember being a mother with two babies and not being able to get out of bed. And it wasn't always the pain. It was just my body couldn't move up that hill.
Exactly.
And it is for me, and I'm like, this is a, I'm, you hit something apparently that is very emotional for me. I'm terrified of ever going back to that place. Like really, really, really scared. And I so appreciate you right now. So I'm going to move on. So I don't, sorry.
I think, I mean, I recognize this so well.
I know.
Because most of the people that are listening now, they know exactly what it is.
I know.
And the positive thing is, sometimes people say, oh, you only have this disease. But I also, what I learned from it, I never judge people. What I do is asking, how do you feel? Why do you come to that decision? Why? I think our world could use this so much more. Just not tolerate, but just like, okay, it's a true feeling what you experience. Can you tell them more about it? Why you have a problem with that? Because it is a problem for you. So there must be something why you suffer. And this open mind, I mean, probably due to that, I have really, really a few very good friends. Because I listen, because I do not judge. So in that way, it can have, I mean, it can also make you richer in a way that you have really, really good relations.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. It's a very, and especially family, I think is so important. I think what finally made me go up the hill was I'll never forget the day in 2017, my older daughter who was 10 or 11 at that point, she walked into my room and I was staring out the window across the cul-de-sac to the neighbors, and it was a beautiful April morning and or afternoon, and she came home from school and she said, a teacher asked if we could do this and if you could help with this, and I just said to her, no, I'm sorry, we can't, my mom is sick and she can't do it. And that moment I was like, if it takes me the rest of my life for my kids, I'm going to figure out how to get up the hill. And it's still hard, right? Okay, so let's, I got sidetracked on the list of questions.
Well, that's normal for us. You know, I get your, every time I get sidetracked because this focusing is sometimes a problem.
Yeah. Okay, so what is the treatment for fatigue when it is recognized in the clinic?
Officially, I think we have to be honest. There is no medical proven treatment yet. And I don't like people that say, no, you can do this, 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 because there, honestly, there is nothing medically proven yet. But we can talk later about what you could do. But I'm a physical doctor. I'm not a medical doctor. So I will never give medical advice. I try to explain people how the mechanisms are. And I investigated a lot of inflammation in animals with inflammation, even in animals with spondyloarthritis rats that had this HLA-B27 human gene. So I got it from Professor Tarak from Dallas. Really nice guy. And there we discovered that in a lot of animals, these inflammation molecules, you call them cytokines, they can lower your serotonin and dopamine, at least not what we found in animals, lower the dopamine and serotonin levels in the brain. This lower dopamine levels may have to do with less motivation, less reward, and may also have to do with this ADHD-like symptoms with problems with concentration. And the serotonin might also have to do with this. You also can see it sometimes in some types of certain types of depression, like how they call it, paralyzed, leaden body or something. Like it feels if you're so unbelievable heavy, your weight so it's difficult to even come from your couch.
Right.
And so that might have to do with this serotonin. At least that's what we see in animals. So when you would ask me, and that's interesting, what would you do yourself? So I do not give medical advice. What would you do yourself? What I did the last 2 years is first try to lower inflammation. That's the best thing. So I regularly go to my rheumatologist to check how high the inflammation is. For me, it's very difficult to get it really in remission, despite all the biologicals I've used. And so then I started 2 years ago with losing weight. I lost 88 pounds in 2 years. I, with the help of experts, I didn't do it myself, with the help of experts. And that's good for my joints, so that's good. But what is known since a few years is that when you have body fat itself is a kind of inflammation producing inflammatory molecules. So that's, I wanted to lose weight for these different reasons. And it's also healthy for everything. Then the other thing was I never drink calorie-rich drinks. I avoid calorie-rich drinks. That's how I lowered my blood glucose. And I also lost many pounds.
Wow.
So that has to do with, I think, a healthy lifestyle. Because a lifestyle helps everybody. Not just when you have a disease, but even, I mean, most people have too much weight. So I think it's good for everybody to try to exercise a little bit, not too much, because we do not have to push. We have to feel whether we can do it or not. That's important, not to cross our boundaries. And when you think about what would I have done as a scientist the next years, then I have two approaches. And in the short term, I would like to see, and that is influenced by my animal research. I would see if it is possible to restore the balance between serotonin, dopamine, and glutamate. For that, you can use antidepressants that affect, there are certain antidepressants that affect motivation. So affect reward, and they increase the dopamine. And they may be very helpful for this motivational fatigue.
So what is is it glutamine or glutamide?
Glutamate. M-A-T-E.
Glutamate. Okay.
Yeah, and that might have to do also with... it's everywhere in the brain, but also may have to do with disturbed cognition, I think.
And, go ahead.
And so trying to restore this balance would be great. And in the long term, and there I become very optimistic due to this long COVID, in the long term, it would be great to see how to restore healthy mitochondria function. So in a way, mitochondria, they produce energy in the cells. And I would make that my priority because there is some evidence that this is also the case in long COVID. That in the muscle cells, there is a dysfunction of the mitochondria.
Oh, interesting.
And I would not be surprised. I think that has to do with this physical fatigue. And I would not be surprised that, but that is my hypothesis, that also in brain cells, there is a dysfunction of the mitochondria.
Interesting. Do we know?
And so if I would have done research in the future, I would focus on how to increase healthy mitochondria in muscle cells and brain cells. And there are ways to do this that's already done in fundamental research in animals.
Okay.
But it would be great to do more research on that, for instance, in animals with inflammation.
So is all the research you said, and I know we're lacking in this area in research for inflammatory conditions, but all of it relates to pharmacological restoring it through antidepressants.
Not the mitochondria.
Okay.
The mitochondria is more at a biological level.
Okay.
In a way that that there are ways that certain cells can inject cells with poor mitochondria function to inject healthy mitochondria. So that's very interesting. But that's the front, how do you call it? It's the edge where research is at the moment. So it would be great if you could increase the amount of healthy mitochondria in cells just by using other cells that can transfer these mitochondria to other cells.
This is fascinating. So I want to talk to you all day, but I'm going to be respectful of your time.
What I just said, it's like talking with family.
I know. So
don't worry.
Okay. I do want to ask, is there, the research is fascinating. As you have retired, is there someone carrying on your work?
I was involved in a European network of scientists.
Okay.
And there are several people that are continuing this work. And in this European network, we're also two Dutch professors that are working in Dallas in a cancer research institute. Because
okay.
It's known that when you treat people with cancer, due to the treatment or due to the cancer, people can experience fatigue even years after they have been treated. And there's a lot of overlap in all these kind of things.
Yeah.
A lot of overlap. So I think it would also be great to not only study it in arthritis, but also in cancer, also in Crohn's disease, for instance, because what you see in Crohn's disease is very similar to what you see in spondyloarthritis, whereas a lot of them of us also have signs of inflammation in the gut, of course.
Right. And there's more research going on there right now.
No, not that much.
No, not enough.
Of course not enough, because we are not taken serious enough.
Right.
Because we should talk about quality of life and not just when can you use or bend your knee.
Right.
And I think that's where we as patients, we have a kind of role, like trying to bring it more and more in the picture that quality of life is even more important, in my opinion, than pain.
Yeah, and it's interesting when you talk about, I just want to go back to something, because I think oftentimes there are moments for people who have spondyloarthritis. I happen to be in one at the moment where I'm at a level of fatigue I haven't been at in years. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to recover it slowly and settle things down. But it mimics in many ways with the drops, I think, and what you are explaining about drops in dopamine, drops in serotonin. When you're as fatigued as you are, you become, I'm generally a very, very happy person. And always looking toward there's a solution for whatever we face. And at the moment, even though I still feel that way inside, on the outside, I'm feeling just, it's hard to, and I think a lot, I'm sharing this because I think a lot of people experience this. It almost mimics a depression when you know you're not in a depression. And I would imagine that, and maybe you can speak to that and then we can get wrapped up, but, maybe you can speak to that. It mimics this feeling, what I think for a lot of people on the outside looks like a depression, because there's, and I do think I've often for years looked at how I keep my serotonin levels up with food or with amino acids. And is that a relevant theory that you can actually, your brain is in a state where most people would expect that it's a depressive state, but you're not actually there. You're just fatigued.
Now you come to a really, really, really important point. Now it always almost makes me a little bit emotional. I think first I want to say is that fatigue is not a weakness, but it is a symptom of immune activity in the past. And when you have chronic inflammation, I mean, then, of course, it goes on for a long time. The other thing is, it's not your fault, so don't push through all at all costs. That's what I've done for many, many years. Just ignore things. But then it piles up. And at the end, you will have to pay the price.
Right.
That's why I have to stop now earlier. But at least I did it because I have the feeling that I was working on something very important. And here I have it even written on a paper. When you feel depressed, seek professional help. Honestly, I did it myself several times. And inflammation increases the risk of depression, but not a depression as a typical depression. It's more atypical depression, because you still have the possibility to enjoy things, but as is, it's all shorter. Spanish, it's much shorter. And again, it's not your fault. And what is interesting that it is, I was really surprised, but that even inspired me more to continue the last years, is that it is known when you have pneumonia and you have to go to a hospital for pneumonia, then 3 months, yeah, Then 3 months later, more people are depressed that experienced it.
Wow.
So it really means it's not a weakness, but you have to be, you become more sensitive due to this enormous high amount of inflammatory molecules. And in a way, it is a kind of sickness behavior. And the group with I was collaborating with in this psycho neuroendocrinology society, there we didn't make a real difference between the symptoms of sickness behavior or this atypical depression. So in a way, we have sickness behavior with many overlapping symptoms of a depression. And that's why we really have to be aware of feeling depressed and going for help, going to a psychologist, but also to a psychiatrist, because they know exactly which drugs increase dopamine, which drugs increase serotonin. And every drug has also side effects. So it's always important to do it in asking your rheumatologist, and because they easily can check if you have enough symptoms and complaints that it is useful to use these drugs. And it's not just pharmacological, you know, because for instance, for serotonin and noradrenaline, there's norepinephrine, these two neurotransmitters, what they do, they increase in the brain growth factors. And in your hippocampus, that is involved in memory, every day we get thousands of new neurons every day. And you need growth factors that stimulates this, that are new neurons born. And the interesting thing is, when you walk every day, you produce more growth factors. But when you don't walk because you have too much fatigue or too much pain, then perhaps you do not have no growth factors. And these antidepressants that I don't like always to use it, antidepressants, these drugs that increase serotonin and noradrenaline, they increase growth factors, and thereby probably also your memory becomes better. And so that's very interesting that it almost does the same thing as walking and exercise.
Interesting. So I'm fascinated by the brain. So
sometimes it's also not that you use to that you have to use it for always. I call it sometimes the sickness behavior is that bad that it's better to treat it because you want to increase the quality of life. And I think a risk of many of us is that we are warriors. We are used to go on. And my advice would be, now I give advice to myself, stop fighting and start feeling. Do not ignore fatigue or pain and be able not to cross your boundaries too often. Because then you increase the, of course, sometimes on purpose you can cross boundaries because you want to join an activity with your family or friends. But then you could manage it by your activity on the days afterwards or the days earlier.
Yeah.
And not to do everything.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you one more question, then I am going to let you go. But before we do, I just want to say that
I really like this talk.
Okay, we can keep going. You tell me, because
no, I have to watch my boundaries.
I know, because I don't want to overdo it.
Ignore.
Because I think
ignore all the feelings.
Yeah. I want to make sure you come back.
Okay, that's fine.
Not immediately, but like soon. So
okay,
I'm going to say this. We've done, I don't know, 50 plus episodes of Spondycast, and I hope to do 1,000 more. By far, and I've loved a lot of our guests, by far this to me has been the most important episode we've done, because I think at the core of it, this is what is interrupting quality of life for so many of us, in addition to pain and some other things. But I think this is, it's so hard when you feel good, but you can't move or get it done or think clearly. And we talk a lot in the community and at SAA about next steps and research. And like, you've convinced me this is an area we need to figure out how to research more. So I want to ask you, final question, and then we're going to give you your evening back. What is one thing, if you could summarize it all, that you would give advice to people about fatigue and that every person experiencing it should know?
First of all, fatigue is not a weakness. And most of us are warriors, so we have to try not to push too hard. And what I really like of this podcast of today, I also feel that it helps me a lot. Just talking with you, when you became emotional, I also was touched, because I had a feeling I'm not the only one.
Yeah, me too.
And this support is so important, really. So that's why I'm always willing to collaborate.
Yeah,
because
me too.
What I talked earlier, it's like talking with family, because you understand me, and hopefully you understand. Yeah, I understand you, of course, but it goes two ways. And that's great.
Yeah. Okay. I'm actually probably going to go have a really good cry after this, but for real.
But
one.
Also, I also have it sometimes, and that helps a lot. Just throw it out.
Yeah. It's like opening the dam.
Exactly.
And I want to thank you, Simon, for joining us.
Thank you for giving the opportunity.
Yeah, I would love to have you back in a few months, and I'm going to go do some more research and get more questions together.
You always can mail. You have my email address. You can always ask questions and try to answer.
Well, thank you, really, from the bottom of my heart. Thank you for joining us, and I look forward to the next time we meet.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
SpondyCast was made possible by donations from the Spondylitis Association of America's individual members and our show's corporate sponsor, AbbVie.
Since our founding in 1983, the Spondylitis Association of America has been the face, voice, and leading nationwide nonprofit educating, empowering, and advocating for people living with spondyloarthritis. Through our extensive work with patients, the medical community, and partners, we provide information and resources to help people impacted by the disease live better lives and champion research to find a cure.